welcome to the Robot Love Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of Robot Love. My name is Brian Mateo Venegas, and tonight I'm going to be discussing a graphic novel named Building Stories. It's from 2012 by one of my favorite artists, Chris Ware, published by Pantheon Books. Now, Building Stories takes place in Chicago, and it's all centered around one apartment building and kind of the day-to-day interactions that people have, some of the behind the scenes of how their lives are, sometimes mundane, sometimes exciting. It documents this in multi-generational format. So there is part of the novel that deals with the original owners and the woman who inherited this particular spot and also becomes the landlady eventually. This novel is very unconventional in format, and Chris Ware is known for this. It's kind of his trademark. It's a large box set, kind of the size of a coffee table book. And when you open the box set, you are confronted with a bevy of illustrations and books. There are 14 written works. They're all printed on cloth-bound books, newspapers, broadsheets, flip books, pretty much everything that he could think of to communicate this story. Now, each one is kind of its own story. There are several characters. There are two different couples, as I mentioned, the landlady, various other people that interact in this environment. One of the most interesting things is there's one character, and she's a female protagonist, and she's not actually named. However, the story focuses around her. Probably three quarters of the story focuses around her life. She rents a room in this house. She does find that she's isolated a bit in this place. She's challenged with some depression. It shows the different relationships that she's had, both past and present, and really focuses on some of the things that she does day to day to pretty much get by, go to work, and you know, take care of herself. She has a challenge that she's missing one leg, so it talks a little bit about how she has developed a way of interacting with people, pretty much talking about her disability and inviting people into her life, some successfully, some not so much. It's a very, very deep piece, and it is a very heavy piece as far as dialogue and interactions go. There is part of the book that takes place in the early 90s, and it really resonated with me because I started doing cartoons in the early 90s, and these stories are pretty much from the grunge era, if you're familiar with some of the 90s terminology. One of the stories is about a young woman who ends up dating a musician through a friend, and he's the stereotypical crappy 90s musician who's really not going anywhere and looks like he works as a security guard or something else on the side. And it's a story about love, how love is exciting, and then how love can wane, and how people can become more and more distant. And this is a very, very touching piece. It's also kind of a tragic piece in how it deals with people being desperate, people feeling isolated, and people also dealing with depression. Now, in my opinion, obviously the main character of this particular graphic novel is the house itself. Very distinct Chicago apartment building. I know a lot of folks that I know are from the Midwest, and will recognize this particular kind of building right away. Another aspect about this graphic novel, which I really love, besides the fact that it's separated into all these different media forms, is that it, as Chris Ware has shown in his previous graphic novels, has an incredibly, almost chaotic symphony of images and small vignettes on each page. So one page can focus on, let's say, an illustration of the apartment building with the front of the building removed, so you can see what people are doing day to day and the conversations they're having within this particular building. There also could be a segment of a story that just follows along the border of the page. You'll also see conversations coming out of walls where you can't see the people who are having these conversations. there are small, almost invisible statements, stories, appendix down at the bottom that tell kind of what's going on in the story. The way that the story flows and the way that the pages flow is pretty brilliant, because when you start on one page, you know, you go from left to right, but it's very natural for it to go into a square frame that has four corners, and that's very natural for you to read that and then kind of be directed to the line that's appropriate. Sometimes it's on the next page, sometimes it's on the first page. That being said, this novel resonated with me because of the fact that it has a perspective of people who associate with each other and don't know each other but know of each other. There is kind of an existential quality to how the viewer, or the voyeur in this case, watches this particular character's life unfold. Now, she has several very interesting relationships, but some of the more interesting parts of her story are these silent scenes of her doing day-to-day things I had mentioned before. There are times when she's just taking a shower and shows the viewer how she takes a shower and how she's able to on one leg, and how she, you know, removes her prosthetic leg and you know, reattaches it and so forth. And it just gives you a really amazing insight. Another thing about this is, you know, there's quite a bit of nudity in this book, just because you're seeing people showering and getting dressed and looking in the mirror and really reflecting on body image. All of the bodies, all of the depictions of the human form in this novel are 100% accurate. There's no idealized form. There's nothing unrealistic. And, you know, some of these characters you see over multiple years, their bodies are changing, as is their overall viewpoints on the lives they live. Now there's an interesting quote, or a series of quotes from one page, probably about four or five panels, that describes the protagonist's day, or should I say weeks, doing mundane things, as I had mentioned, work, dating, going out. So I wanted to read you just a few frames of this. It starts out when she's locking her door and says, "Everything is always the same. Nothing ever changes. I'm never going to change. I go out. I go to my dead-end job. I go out with friends. I stay home. It doesn't matter. Everything depresses me. How many dozens, no hundreds of nights have I spent that I've now completely forgotten? How many dinners have I eaten? How many showers have I taken? Every day runs together. Everything runs down the drain. And all I'm left with is just the vaguest sense of it all, a general gist. And then even that dwindles away. Whole periods of my life are now nothing more than a few isolated, unrelated recollections." Now, I know what you're thinking. That sounds extremely depressing. It's really not. It's actually inspiring, because through this process of her understanding who she is as a person, progressively these revelations are more evolved. She understands a little bit more about the intentions of people around her, and how she doesn't need to consistently be disappointed in herself and other people. And one of the things that I know a lot of people struggle with, including myself, is the concept of being alone. Being solemn and happy and not isolated is a difficult part of, you know, maturing as a person, in my opinion. And this is a great example of that. Now, one of the characters that has an interesting backstory is the landlady. So quite often there will be portions of the book where you'll have a narrative interject that's of the elderly landlady who has lived there entire life and inherited this from her parents. And there is quite a bit of backstory that features her parents and how this landlady has grown up, how she appreciated having her family there and seeing the other tenants, and the relationship she had with her father, and how people get older and they die, and how times change. And unfortunately, by the time she's an elderly woman and she's the landlady of this building, a lot of the commentary are things, internal dialogue and comments she has about how her tenants look, what their bodies look like, what they do at night, how she can hear them doing different things, how she just wish she didn't need to have them in the house. And there are a lot of comparisons between her and the building in the book about, paraphrasing, she was a rundown old lady and so was the building. So in that case, it is its own character, the building. And as these people who cohabitate anonymously become more entrenched in their own lives, it really resonates with the viewer. Now, there are other graphic novels, just kind of on a side note, that Chris Ware has done, including, and this was the first one that I actually had the pleasure of reading. It was in 1994 when I started doing graphic novels and comics. It's called Acme Novelty Library. And we could go into that for an entire episode of the podcast. So check that out. A lot of times you can order these online and not spend a ton of money. Some of them are used. I do try to buy them new quite a bit because, my journey to being published and so forth, it really does help the artist, just like, not taking music from the internet. That's a whole other discussion. And, utilizing Spotify, at least where they get a piece of the profit. So I do like to purchase new books, or if possible, purchase them from the bookstore. Although with graphic novels, it's difficult to get some of these more obscure pieces. The other piece that I really enjoyed by Chris Ware is a graphic novel by the name of Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Cat on Earth. Now, this is also in an interesting format. It's a square book, and it's pretty thick. It's like a little mini local phone book in your hometown. And it is a story that has a beautiful set of illustrations. It's a historical novel that takes place, well, basically the history of Chicago is around it. As you can tell, Chicago is a pretty important theme to Chris. There's a kid whose father works as a construction worker, and the 1892 World's Fair is going up. All around him, everyone is excited. He goes and visits his dad at work. He and a friend that he has sneaks behind the fence regularly and gets into trouble and has some pretty harrowing adventures. I'm a sucker for this because I was and still am obsessed with the story of the Chicago World's Fair and how it unfolded and some of the high points and low points and how you can still visit one building and one island with some old building remnants. But I can get excited about a novel that mentions things historically and kind of goes from there. So back to the subject of our podcast, I'd like to go through a few more specifics about the storyline. Now, I'm not about spoilers. I don't love spoilers. I think sometimes people love to do spoilers just to kind of make other people uncomfortable. So I'm not really going to tell you the entire story of this graphic novel, but I want to tell you a little bit more on how each section is separated and kind of how they're related in a very strange way, but each section of the box set is quite enjoyable. So a little bit more about the female protagonist that we spoke about earlier in the podcast. So she, in the history that is provided, was an artist, pursued art, was a writer, a painter. And it went a little bit into some of the negative experiences that she had in art school, which for all the artists out there, we can all kind of commiserate with. Well, basically anybody who's got a passion for anything that they've studied in college has had their ego damaged and or their love for that particular passion squashed and reduced to either changing majors or believing that you're not worthy of actually being in this vocation. So a lot of the story in one of the sections speaks a little bit about how in art school she, you know, wasn't particularly going to be at the top of the class or extraordinarily successful. She speaks to the fact that in high school she really didn't have a boyfriend, but in college, you know, right away she did have a boyfriend, and she had the typical college experience, kind of learning how to interact with people, live around other people, and, you know, develop relationships, as it is in respect to completely different circumstances and completely different environments. And I know we can all think about college in that way. One of the things that was quite interesting and, you know, a bit shocking about this story is, you know, as she progresses towards the point when she is living in this particular Chicago apartment, this brownstone, she's dealing with the fact that she's had reoccurring loss in her life, not only physical, but emotional. For example, the loss of her leg was a childhood injury in a boating accident. She lost quite a few relationships. She actually had an abortion with an early boyfriend, and he subsequently left her. So she had other boyfriends and another relationship and eventually a marriage, and was very attached to a cat, lost the cat. There were a lot of other kind of morose anecdotes in there, including flushing a mouse down the toilet and all these other things that kind of represent loss that she's, you know, experienced in some of the ways that she's acted out upon these experiences in general. So in the actual apartment building, during the time where she is living in the apartment on the third floor, below her is a couple that's constantly fighting, a couple that is on the edge of breaking up pretty much all the time. And on the first floor is the landlady who lives there, and I spoke about briefly earlier, does not care for her tenants, and, you know, has all of these disparaging thoughts, and feels like, you know, all of them are simply an annoyance and should probably not be there if it wasn't for the fact that they were basically paying to keep the house running in the form of rent. The story of the couple on the second floor kind of goes in a little bit of an unexpected way. In the future, the female protagonist in that particular relationship has her own family. She has a child. And now there's an interesting story arc regarding the couple who lives on the second floor. There is one of the sections in the graphic novel speaks about kind of jumps forward into the future, and humankind, or, you know, a separate alien being, has become what's called sensitives. So they can listen to snippets of conversations from kind of a central data bank and listen back on people and their experiences and their dialogue within specific moments in time. I understand it's a stretch, but what it does is it gives an omnipresence to a lot of the dialogue, and you're able to kind of have an explanation of how you can hear and experience what these people are experiencing. So they're getting snippets of the experience of this couple. They're seeing why they're fighting. They're seeing kind of the progression of when they meet and how their relationship kind of spirals into oblivion. So after we see the section of the sensitives, we also find out that the female protagonist in this relationship eventually has a child and moves on with her life. Now, one of the, in my opinion, kind of cool things is, and he does this quite a bit as an author and an artist, one thing kind of connects to another thing. It's one conducive story, but completely different narratives. So in the future, she, the female protagonist, the mother, tells her child these stories, and she makes up these kind of different characters. And one in particular that I think is absolutely amazing is a story that she tells her child about a bee. And this bee is its own story arc. And it starts out with this little booklet. I'm sorry for the the pause here. So it's actually called Branford, the Best Bee in the World. And there's an entire comic book about Branford. And there's also an entire foldout from a fictitious paper that's all about bee business and things that bees do. And it's called The Daily Bee. And its subtext is, humorous events as the males emerge, our colony and pictures revealed. So all of the stories that she's telling her daughter are illustrated into this separate work within the book. Now, it's not really a story that you would imagine someone would tell their child. There's quite a bit of violence. There's quite a bit of loneliness and loss and, you know, stories of the drones and the female bees and everything else that's happening. And it kind of mirrors how bees' lives are. So in that respect, it's not really too far-fetched as far as following the life and times of a bee. So anyway, that is a completely separate thing, a different art style, very similar formatting. The comic book itself is a little bit more, it's a little bit more like Jimmy Corrigan, The Smartest Kid on Earth, his 2000 work. So you've got, you know, more of a traditional format, kind of a really cool improv feel to it with all these different notes, not unlike the other works that I mentioned as well. So that's a story about the couple on the second floor, and then obviously the first floor is the landlady and the things that happen to her and how she gets to the point where she really has kind of lost faith in people in general. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I know in the description of the episode that I put out earlier today, the little audio preview, I had mentioned something about, you know, talking a little bit about Marcel Duchamp and his work and some of the things that he did experimentally during the early part of the 20th century. And I'm going to, but you know what? I kind of go with the flow here on Robot Love. I'm not going to go too far into it. When I started the episode and I had outlined a ton to talk about, I found that talking about Chris Ware's work was a little more interesting to me. Now, anyone who's been to art school or anybody who actually studies art knows a little bit about Dada, Dada being kind of the movement in the early part of the 20th century that dealt with the concept of art, the concept of found objects, the concept of abstraction of thought. So anything that's a found object can be art if you name it so. Anything that is called art that may not be traditionally considered art, just this is art, or this is not a pipe in one famous painting that he did, basically saying, don't trust your senses, don't trust me, and don't trust what anybody else says. Think independently and, you know, continue to feel that the information presented to you is not always true, or because you don't believe in it, it can be untrue. So I know that it's kind of a weird sound bit of what, you know, Dada art is, considering it's one of the most complex subjects in art history and is actually a very popular subject in master's thesis of art history and even PhD programs. So I'll leave that at that. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, because of the unique way that Chris Ware put this particular box set together, it is very reminiscent, and a lot of people who read it think automatically about Marcel Duchamp's work Valise. So there was a period of time when Marcel Duchamp was making some money, not very much, by creating art and having people do subscriptions and have subscriptions so that he could send things out and create new work and actually be compensated for it. So these works were basically, this particular one was a brown leather case, and it had reportedly, you know, it's an old piece, 69 reproductions of some of the work that he had done. There were some replicas, some miniaturized versions of some of his other art projects, some of his found items, some encrypted notes, some handwritten things, pretty much just this melange of different things that he wanted to express in this case, and they were roughly related, some were purposely not related, and it seems to be basically what Chris Ware did, just to kind of take everything that he wanted to tell in this box and even tangentially connect them, even if he has several stories that, you know, can basically be told separately. So in this case, I just wanted to mention that, and like I always do when I talk about graphic novels, is I really, really want people to go out and get the graphic novel, or find a place where they can see the breakdown or see the artwork. When you're listening to this, if you're by a computer, or once you finish with this podcast, hopefully you've made it all the way to the end of this somewhat slow-going explanation of a very complex work. Take a look. Put in Chris Ware. Look at some of Chris Ware's stuff. Put in building stories, graphic novel, and go to the image search and really take a look at some of the things that he did with this. It's intriguing, and it's, even if you're not a fan of graphic novels or this type of artwork in general, it's extraordinary. And it's a true opus by Chris Ware, and it's a little too big to even discuss it in a few hours. But I hope that from this particular podcast, you've had at least an eyebrow raised to the prospect of going and reviewing this. So I want to thank you for listening to this. I know that this is a very particular subject matter, and these things are sometimes a little bit hard to follow if you haven't actually read the graphic novel. And you may get it in the box set and just look over it, or you may get it and just be attracted to the B comic, or just be attracted to the full-size newspapers that he printed with different stories on them, including the newspaper that is so aptly titled The Daily Bee. So reach out to me on Facebook, reach out to me on my website, rotorocomic.com, that's R-O-T-O-R-O, comic.com, and that is the place where I have my website for my graphic novel, Rotoro, and, you know, give me some input on that, give me some input on the podcast. I know the last podcast we had Dan Stack on, and he spoke very, very eloquently and very, well informed about professional wrestling and you know the graphic novel that we read, although it did kind of go a little bit more into the subject of professional wrestling without a lot of discussion about Box Brown's novel about Andre the Giant. But you know, sometimes that's how these things go in these conversations. Now next week, depending on who I can get as a guest, there's several people that I might get as a guest. It may very well be a subject matter about discussing about the old Godzilla films that a lot of us in our generation and people who are rediscovering it in younger generations is extraordinary. I mean, these movies, there are dozens and dozens of movies with characters beyond just Godzilla. There's Mecha Godzilla and Rodan and for some weird reason, Godzilla's son. So it's a great way to spend a podcast, and I've got some invites out for people to discuss that. If not, there may be a segment about Star Wars comics and a discussion with a few of the Star Wars experts that I know regarding the last two movies and Rogue One, and just kind of where the franchise is going. That's a good thing about this podcast. If you're not totally into Star Wars, maybe you'll find it interesting. And you know, for those people that tuned in just to discuss or hear the dialogue that I'm having, self-dialogue, regarding Chris Ware's work, thank you. And thank you for all the people who have subscribed and been able to follow my podcast. I know everyone is busy. It's actually available on all major platforms, 8 different platforms. So pretty much everything you've got, you can listen to it and search Robot Love or follow the links that I send out on Facebook and Twitter. All right, this is Brian signing off. Thanks again and have a great day. Talk to you soon.
To Robot Love Podcast. Remember to check out Brian's comic Rotoro at rotorocomic.com.